Welcome to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese. It's the early 1900s in America, and you're an outlaw turned good named John Marston. The game is Red Dead Redemption, and as a player, you get to do all kinds of fun stuff, like tote a six-shooter, ride a horse, you can save damsels in distress, you can gamble and train hop, you can shoot bears and cougars and rabbits and drive stagecoaches, all across a vast and scenic open world. Publisher and developer Rockstar Games knew they wanted something a little different for a soundtrack to the epic tale of an outlaw in the Old West, so they turned to Bill Elm and Woody Jackson. I talked to Bill Elm about their innovative soundscape and about his band, Friends of Dean Martinez. Thank you again. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this today.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Red Dead Redemption, I'll say, I went through it twice, and only because the first time I went through it, I was trying. It's the first time I've attempted to get a platinum trophy in a game. I was like that into the game that I loved it that much. But then my PlayStation broke, and I lost it all. So I started going through the game again. I never got all the way through it again, but I loved the game and I loved the music, and so that is why I wanted to talk to you and Woody too. And it's unfortunate he's not here, but you're just as good. So
yeah.
So the composers I've spoken with so far have all had quite a bit of experience writing for video games, but this was your first, right?
Yes.
What did you enjoy about the process?
Well, I mean, I enjoyed the fact that it was a Western, certainly. It was just really interesting writing music for that kind of medium. I'm not much of a gamer, and so I didn't have much background in it, and it was just a great new experience. Rockstar wanted everything to be so interactive. It was kind of like this puzzle or challenge, you know, in the beginning to figure out how it was actually all going to come together and work.
So you wrote the score collaboratively with Woody Jackson, correct?
Yes.
And so how did that project come about for you guys?
Well, I was actually hired on, I guess Rockstar had some of my band Friends of Dean Martinez's CDs. You know, and they thought that we'd be a good fit for what they wanted. Woody had been in the band, you know, back in 96, 97, and we had reconnected a couple years ago. And so basically, he had a studio out in L.A. and kind of started by just going out there and recording, and he was the, you know, essentially the engineer. And then it just became apparent that he was perfect for working on it, and he was contributing way more than just being an engineer. So brought him on and went from there.
So I did listen to a lot of your music on your Friends of Dean Martinez page, and it is very experimental Western kind of. It's hard to pigeonhole, which I like about it. So tell me about the band and how you've come to be in the band and what your role is.
Well, it was kind of I was learning to play steel guitar, and I was, you know, this is back in, you know, 94, 93, and really loved Santo and Johnny. So the band kind of started out as just an instrumental side project to basically be a Santo and Johnny cover band, you know, just for fun. And it was back when the lounge stuff was kind of happening. And the guys in the band at that point, we were all playing with another band called Giant Sand. And so it was kind of a side effort. And it just so happened that we got picked up by Sub Pop and started putting out records. And at that point, had to start writing original music. Developed into this Santo and Johnny meets Spaghetti Western kind of developed from there. Be a little experimental to keep things interesting over 10, 11 records with a steel guitar-fronted instrumental band.
So you originally were just a guitar player, and then you picked up steel guitar, is that right?
Yes.
And you've done some innovative things with that instrument. So can you talk a little bit about that?
It's not pedal steel, but, it was like a double eight string master. You know, I guess at some point I started breaking away from the more Santo and Johnny sound to adding tape delays and Ebos, and it was taking the place of the vocals. And, you know, I guess Santo and Johnny meets Pink Floyd, kind of, you know, a little spacier.
One of the things that I really like about the score for Red Dead Redemption is it's almost timeless. And you can't really pinpoint an era of the music. You can tell it's Western, but it's very futuristic, but yet also very kind of reminiscent of the old-time spaghetti Western. So was that intentional?
Yeah. I mean, you can't really go head-to-head with Morricone or, you know, some of the great stuff that's been that's been done in Westerns, you know, because that is what people think of when they think of Westerns. So it was, you know, kind of, it took us a while to figure out because Rockstar wasn't necessarily sure what they wanted, but they were definitely sure of what they didn't want. And so we kind of had to record for a while and kind of bracket things and then... you know, to figure out what we were going to do, and it slowly came together. The idea, obviously, was to make it unique and something that would give every impression that, you know, it was what is in people's minds when they think of Westerns, but also that it was its own thing.
Did you listen to anything to get yourself in the space for writing for something like Red Dead?
We spent a lot of time, or I spent a lot of time with Ivan Pavlovich from Rockstar. He's the music supervisor, just trading songs back and forth and trying to establish a dialogue about what they wanted, because the game certainly wasn't temped with any music. Like, yeah, we just talked music for months as we were working on things, from Gil Evans to Public Enemy to, you know, trying to discern exactly what they liked about that. Not the obvious what was going on, but the emotion that was taken from it.
You keep bringing up Ennio Morricone, and he was, of course, a fantastic Italian, is a fantastic Italian composer of spaghetti Westerns. So you're familiar then with him and his music and the films he does?
Yeah, I mean, of course, I grew up watching Westerns and the,
It's hard to escape then, huh?
Yeah, and I mean, he's just, obviously, he's the maestro.
Yeah, he is. He's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite score of his?
Once Upon a Time in the West, I think is the...
Yeah.
You know, the favorite. The classic.
Thank you. done some writing for film, though, too, right?
Yes.
Fast Food Nation, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
So you've done some films that have obviously enjoyed a bit of success in their own right. So comparing that situation to writing for games, what was the difference for you? What did you like? What did you dislike?
Well, it was hard initially to like wrap your mind around the concept of the video game and the open world game that it's, especially in Red Dead. I mean, you can ride around 15, 20 minutes before anything happens, just, you know, picking flowers mm-hmm. or shooting birds. And, you know, obviously when you're doing a film, there's a finite scene length and, you know, they may chop it down or extend it, but it's still from point A to point B and then it's over. And with the game, it was, you know, the challenge was to make it so random that you could spend 20 minutes listening to the, you know, the whistler and the marxophone without necessarily hearing the loop come back around. And also to be ready at any point to jump into the next level or, you know, if something starts happening, if you get near somebody in the game where, you know, there's potential for action, then, you know, the music is going to switch up. We essentially had 8 songs running side by side the whole time, and depending on what was going on, well, they would add this other, you know, stems 1, 2, and 3 would start playing. I mean, it's also different if you're walking or riding a horse.
That's one of the things that Rockstar seems to be particularly adept at, is creating these huge open worlds where you pretty much never get bored. There's always something to do.
Yeah. After the game came out and I went and got a PlayStation and played through it, it was amazing to see what they had actually done with all of the music.
Yeah, sure.
And how well it came off.
The nice thing about an open world game like that that's produced so well and has such great music is that you can be riding around, like you're saying, you can ride your horse for 20 minutes and not really do anything, but you don't get bored and you don't get sick of the music, and it's just, it was a good game.
Yeah, definitely.
You're listening to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Rees. My guest this week is Bill Elm, one of the men responsible for the award-winning soundtrack to Red Dead Redemption. The thing about the end of Red Dead Redemption, it was certainly one of the more shocking endings in a video game.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you realize, and I don't want to say on here what the end is, but at what point did you realize that everything was going to change at the end?
I had no idea until...
They didn't tell you.
No. I mean, you know, we were so focused on, I mixed 18 hours of music for the game, and there were 200 cues in it. And so it was just, you know, it was a very massive job. And so we were definitely getting quick times of the, you know, of playthroughs, but there was no time to really focus on what was happening in the game. We were more concerned about filling the slots and filling out the world with different signature sounds so that you could essentially close your eyes and know that you were in this part of Mexico as opposed to this part. As far as the music went, the storyline didn't matter as much because mm-hmm. it was just an open world that we were concerned with, you know, providing the atmosphere for.
Sure, more location-based kind of interaction that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I understand.
And, you know, the outcome of a gunfight doesn't really matter as long as you have good music for the gunfight.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about your background in music.
Well, I was just a guitar player, I think, from about 12 years old, and started playing in bands in Tucson. You know, self-taught or taught by friends. And then I'd broken my hand at one point and bought a lap steel and found that, well, guitar players are kind of a dime a dozen, and if I could add lap steel to my resume, then it was easier to get jobs in bands. And then in 94 joined Giant Sand. It was kind of a bigger Tucson band, and started touring with them and got my first taste of what it was like to tour and be on a label and record and that sort of thing. And then Friends of Dean Martinez came out of there. So.
Mentioned that you wrote 18 hours of music for Red Dead Redemption. That's considerably more music than you would need to write for a film.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably
considerably like, more. Yeah. Did you find that one of the bigger challenges, just coming up with that much material that was engaging and insightful and enjoyable?
Yes and no. I mean, initially it was, because it was kind of overwhelming. Like, you kind of didn't want to think about how much had to be done, but once we got the format down, it was actually wonderful to have that many cues to do that you could try out different things, and it was nice to be able to spend that much time with the music and to experiment.
So how did you incorporate the elements of what you do in Friends of Dean Martinez into the score for Red Dead?
I think that with just being in an instrumental band for that long, and especially something like Friends of Dean Martinez, where it's more about the atmosphere or the soundscape, and so that kind of learned that it's less maybe how many notes you're playing or what you're playing, and more about how you're treating the sound and the atmosphere. And that was, you know, for Red Dead, it's there's fairly simple stuff going on at the bass level, but if you know, throw it through a nice plate reverb and keep thinking about the less is more aspect of things, that it provides for a nice backdrop.
And I'm so glad you mentioned that less is more, because the thing, another thing that draws me to that score is that everything that happens musically seems very careful and very deliberate, and it makes it very seamless. And I certainly don't mean to compare you to Miles Davis, but it reminds me of that style of playing where you're thinking about what you want to be heard and how you're going to make that happen on the instruments. So you're listening to this score as you're, you know, riding your horse through Mexico or wherever, and it just paints this landscape through its very deliberate choice of sound that's happening as you're riding by mountains or streams or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think that one thought out note is better than, you know, 10.
Very true.
We really tried to keep it sparse, because you play the game for so long.
It's a sparse landscape at times, too.
Yeah.
Should ask you specifically what your role was and what Woody's role was.
I mean, we were both writing music for different parts, you know, and then we would get together and trade things off. And I mean, it was just a very collaborative effort. you know, at a certain point, I think I turned more towards towards mixing and putting everything together and actually crafting the pieces, and Woody was still churning out new things. The amount of stuff that was recorded for it was just massive. You know, maybe at the beginning it was hard to figure out how we were going to do it, and so we were recording, say, sessions with, you know, 80 tracks that were 15 minutes long, and so it was just a ton of recorded material, and that became at some point difficult to whittle it down to, you know, to what it ended up in the game, but it was wonderful also to work with some really brilliant musicians. The guy who played harmonica on it is, you know, he played on Pet Sounds and Good Vibrations and Rainy Days and Mondays, He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother, as well as a ton of Westerns. Because Yvonne had sent over a track one day in this harmonica that he liked in it, and looked it up, and he said, well, maybe we can get something like this in there, and we came back with, well, maybe we can just get you that guy.
Who was the whistler?
The whistler was a guy named Amir, and he plays with, I guess, a bunch of bands, but he's a friend of Woody's, and he plays with Charlotte Gainsbourg. And he came over to do some violin on it, and for that we had hired this world champion whistler who actually won the world whistling championships, and he was great, but he was kind of a through the teeth whistler. It wasn't the whistle that we needed, and Amir heard what he did, and he's like, I can whistle better than that, and so he became the whistler as well as the violinist.
The game has been a huge success, obviously,
yeah.
Just a huge success. And you've gotten quite a bit of recognition, you and Woody, for the music you wrote. Can you talk briefly about that before I let you go?
We won, I think it won, Game of the Year. And I'm not sure which awards ceremonies are actually like the Game of the Year, but the Spike VGAs were the televised ones, so it seemed like maybe that was the big one. But it got Game of the Year, and we got Best Original Score, and then Machinima Inside Gaming Awards, Best Original Score there, and I think we've gotten multiple places. I mean, tons. It was very nice to be recognized for something that kind of sticks out when you think of video game music. I think that it's not, obviously, not your typical sound, and we really made an effort to make it different and to be recording, you know, acoustic instruments, and it's not full of samples, and it was just nice to know that people appreciated the work that was done. And I think it's definitely deserving of Game of the Year because it's a brilliant effort by Rockstar.
Absolutely. Great. Well, thanks, Bill.
Yeah. Thank you.
You've been listening to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese, and our technical director is Sam Keenan. On the next episode of Top Score, we talk to Normand Corbet, the man behind the music to one of the most fascinating games of 2010, Heavy Rain. If you're a fan of Top Score, find us on Twitter and Tumblr at Top Score Podcast, or leave us a comment on iTunes. Ready? now?
Rolling.
Okay, maybe I'll just speak up a little bit. How's that? Is that better? Because I was talking kind of quietly.
Well, you're louder when you do that, yeah.
Yeah. And drive stagecoaches across a vast and scenic open world. It's fun. Publisher.
Wow.
Maybe not that fun.
You're talking really fast.
I am? Okay, I'll talk more slowly. I'll chill down.
Hi, Lizard Man.